This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here at Sumo Illuminate with Bruno Kurtic, VP of Product.
Thank you, Ian. I'm Bruno. I'm Head of Product and Strategy, one of the founding team members here at Sumo. Been with Sumo since the very beginning. I'm mostly focused on product strategy, product management. I spend a lot of time with our security team and our solutions team, who builds solutions on top of Sumo Logic's platform. That's me.
Security teams get more information than they can cope with. They're used to threat intelligence, actionable intelligence. You use the phrase continuous intelligence. What does it mean?
Continuous intelligence, it means a variety of things in context of this type of data. The way that we think about this is digital services that are essentially becoming the way that all industries are doing business, which is serving their customers digitally. It changes the primary customer interface from what used to be a traditional way of interfacing with customers in stores and other places in brick and mortar to having their software interface with their customers. Continuous intelligence means to us that data that digital service emits is incredibly rich. It's becoming the primary source of signal across the enterprise to solve for a variety of use cases, not just security, but visibility into their operation, availability, performance, customer experience, into security, compliance, security operations, but much beyond that as well. It extends into serving marketing teams, product teams, sales teams to understand their customers, understand the products, understands the applications that they build and serve those products, those customers with. And that's what continuous intelligence means to us. It means making sure that you can capture all this real-time data in a continuous way, apply different lenses to it so that all parts of the business can leverage it so that you can run your business better holistically, not just for one department, but across your departments.
I'm particularly interested at the DevSecOps portion here, mainly because we hear a lot about it, but the practicalities on the ground are that companies are paying lip service because they really don't know how to bring the teams together. If you're able to get that level of intelligence out of the data that's being generated by services and apps, particularly where compliance is concerned, where the risk of data being put into the wrong place or being lost or stolen is concerned, how do you engage the security teams here?
It's interesting. I'll give you a quick anecdote. In one of our advisory meetings with a bunch of our customers a year or so back, we asked the question, can you please let us know how many of you have dedicated security teams? And a small portion of the room raised a hand. And when I asked the question, how many of you are responsible for security of your digital services, everybody raised their hand. What that tells us, and as we interface with our customers in this sort of whole new mode of shipping code to production continuously, making changes at a speed of software delivery in Agile and DevOps, what's happening is that security has to be embedded in many of these steps of how software gets delivered. What we find is that a lot of the what you would traditionally call ops teams or dev teams participate in security triage. They participate in security incidents. They closely collaborate with security teams on the ground. Our own security team is very much embedded with our engineering and DevOps and SRE teams. They share tooling. They share analysis. They use exactly the same data to run the service as they do to operate the service from the security and compliance perspective. The compliance regulation that we adhere to and we have attestations for, we have to spend a tremendous amount of time with our development teams. What we do is the way that this is integrated and the way that we help our customers and integrate the full DevSecOps process is that we encourage them to embed these processes, smash them together, make sure that from the beginning of the development cycle, you pay attention to security, even if you don't have any security team members on your development teams. But we're deploying tools, our developers and DevOps teams are starting to look at security concerns ahead of time. They're running compliance checks before they ever ship any code to production. We're running continuous penetration tests. And so to us, this is just essentially meshing of these processes because digital services in the cloud run in very different environments than they used to run on-premise. There is no perimeter. You can't trust that everything inside is secure and stuff outside is thick and protected. You actually have to assume that everything is breachable, that bad guys can be running right next to you. And that means that as you develop software, security must be involved.
When we traditionally look at the engagement of security with developers and operations teams, it's always early in the process. We're trying to embed into the pipeline. We're trying to pick up problems with code, make sure that the applications run. Your focus is as much on the data, which is really just a byproduct in many ways of the applications. Therefore, it's not seen as part of the security story. How do we switch that focus? How do we switch the mindset?
It actually very much is part of the security story. As we embed security early in the process, we also embed operations and SRE in the process of security operations, compliance monitoring, and compliance auditing. The data that the application emits is the data that tells you whether you are actually compliant. It tells you what is actually occurring in your infrastructure. It tells you what are the events that you should be paying attention to in this sort of ephemeral environments that people operate in right now. It's interesting about this data, the technologies that exist today that help you collect, manage, persist, and then analyze that data really can't cope effectively with the scale and onslaught of the data. So one of the big problems for security and operations teams has been, I must take only what I must have and discard everything else because I can't afford to keep it in the system. Our focus in product development here in product strategy has been to try to capture all data sets, serve and manage those data sets in a way that is cost effective, spend the computational resources only on stuff that must be monitored and analyzed heavily only on those, separate those from the ones that are going to be useful in subsequent investigations when something is detected, something has occurred, that you will then actually apply analytics to other data sets that you need to understand what actually occurred. So basically capturing all the data, all the exhaust of the application that will actually have everything about the evidence of an incident that might have occurred. And what's interesting about that is this is where also DevOps and SRE teams assist the security teams because they interface with this data on a daily basis where security might not always. It's a collaborative approach and collaborative environment.
It's interesting because it switches around our perception of what DevSecOps is and what we would normally see as being our separate security teams, the people in the SOCs who are managing our SIEMs and everything else. And there is this disconnect between the two. One is an application focus, one is a holistic focus on all the data. How are customers dealing with this? Because they understand the hard line between the two, but now you're making that a soft line.
In digital, there is no distinction. In digital, everything is the application. All of your infrastructure underneath the application is there because it needs to run the application. Our philosophy on this is that if it has anything to do with the software that you're running that serves your customers, that generates revenue, it's part of the application. Our SOC team, internal SOC team, is very much monitoring the application and the infrastructure underneath it in a holistic way. To us, as we look at our customers and look at the market of basically transforming from, I'm running a farm on Windows service. No, you're not running a farm on Windows service. You're running some infrastructure that's running some software that's doing some mission critical business process or it's serving customers. That's how all of our customers think about their digital services because they all have P&Ls. If the app is down, if the site is down, you're not generating revenue. If it's breached, the app is breached, infrastructure is breached, doesn't matter, it's been breached. We think of it philosophically as the full stack of data and technology.
You talk to most people about full stack in an IT team, and they're thinking about software components. And we have a particular problem going on at the moment. We are just coming to grips with containers, and now we're coming to grips with orchestration. But you've just released a report that shows that serverless is already starting to roll over the top of that. How do we contain this? Because there's a real risk here that the new technologies coming along will overwhelm our ability to secure, develop, and even architect.
We happen to be, this time in technology is really interesting. So much is changing. The mode is changing. You're running from private data center into multi-cloud today, going from a traditional waterfall lifecycle to a high-speed development lifecycle of Agile and DevOps, moving from traditional three-tier architectures into microservices architecture. Why do you do that? Because you want to build software and applications that can leverage the properties of clouds and benefits of those. And then you're switching from traditional Oracles and Microsofts of the world to open source technologies, things like Cassandra's, Kafka's, Kubernetes, and so on. The rate of change is just tremendous. What we're hearing from our customers is that the biggest challenge for them, which is what you were alluding to earlier, is it's the skills gap that that's creating. You can't get people who understand all of this stuff at this point. And if you believe that traditional industries are moving this way as well, and they are, then what do you do? How do you reconcile that? Is we've been banging our head against the wall with this question for a while. And one of the things that we just announced, and we're going to talk about at this conference as well, is this concept of global intelligence service. The global intelligence service that we just built and we are rolling out into production is a service whose purpose is the following. Its purpose is to help enterprises select, configure, deploy, operate, and secure new technologies without having to learn everything about those technologies in their own silos. Because what it does, it takes this global data that we process, it computes benchmarks of key service level indicators, key performance indicators, key risk indicators if it's a security technology, and then bakes those benchmarks into our service and enables our customers to baseline and compare their own behavior against those benchmarks and understand how they're running, whether they're seeing anomalies, whether they're getting efficiencies out of how they're running them. It's also helping them select these technologies. The report called Continuous Intelligence Report actually shows what are the popular technologies in these new microservices environments in the cloud. It also shows how you might deploy them. So if you're adopting a NoSQL database, something like, let's say, a MongoDB, well, wouldn't it be helpful if we could tell you that majority of users on AWS are deploying MongoDBs on general purpose instances of this type of and this size? That's what we're building into our service to try to help our customers adopt technologies faster and more effectively.
There's a huge amount to unravel there, but I'm only going to pick on two things. The first, you talked there about configure. You talked about being able to monitor what's going on. In your report, the vast majority of your customers who responded are on AWS. I've lost count of the number of misconfigured AWS buckets of data are sitting around on the internet. We promoted configuration as being able to make things more secure, because after all, we weren't writing customized code that needed to go through all sorts of code checks. But configuration is failing us. And it's failing us because people are sloppy with it. They think there's nothing they have to think about. How are you going to fix that?
What we're going to do for a lot of our users who are in the situation, who use commonly adopted stacks like GCP or AWS or Azure, or if you look at components themselves, things like Cassandra's and MySQL's and others, what we will do is, because we have, at our integration point of view with these technologies, we get tremendous amount of signal about what is their configuration, how they're running, where they're running, what infrastructure they leverage underneath. What we do with this information is we essentially bake it into our solutions so that when you're dropping yourself onto diving into Amazon or AWS and you're starting to configure things, typically our customers collect data sets such as CloudTrail and VPC flow data and AWS config data and S3 audit data and all these things. And what this global intelligence service is essentially going to compare the behavior of those data sets and what it's emitting through those data sets. Configuration changes, relationships of entities underneath those, and essentially be able to tell customers key statistics. Hey, we think that you have significantly more open S3 buckets than we see elsewhere. We see that you're getting a lot more events that are of cryptocurrency mining than another enterprise might be, or Tor activity, whatever it might be. The whole purpose of this is we don't know all the rules. We're not going to know and be able to be prescriptive about every single thing that people use, because technology changes so quickly, we can't keep up with it, but neither can they. But the technology can. Our own service is going to benchmark this in real time and basically say, hey, here's what we see. You won't have every answer, but it'll tell you where to look and what to worry about. Prioritize activities to get you to a better state.
That's a nice lead to what my second thing was I wanted to take out of what you said earlier. You talk here about containers, microservices, new architectures. But when people deploy your product in order to do this, they're actually just taking code and doing the deploy themselves. Why do I not just get from you a container that is licensed, that I then just simply push out as many times as I need? Surely it makes sense, if you're going to tell people this is what you've got to do and this is how you do it, that all of your product is shipped in its own containers as microservices that I just simply assemble into what I'm doing as a client. Because any time I've got to do more than that, it introduces problems.
The components that we shipped, Sumo Logic componentry, that are part of our service, and we are a SaaS service, so there's really not much to ship or deploy, are shipped that way. We deploy our own containers and pods, for example, for Kubernetes monitoring. That all gets packaged. You just drop it into your cluster, and it's ready to go. The challenge with us providing, well, let's call it a gold standard container, is that the advancement in what people are doing and learning and best practices are baked in outside of Sumo. People are doing this better than we are. The market for the open source community is far better and much faster than any one company can be. We don't want to be a barrier in the process and basically saying to customers, hey, to most effectively do this, here's the container that we approve. They're going to do that even better than we are. What we can do is, for those who are not expert at it, is we can tell them where challenges exist in their infrastructure, where challenges exist in their configuration, where challenges exist in the way that they're running things, in performance and utilization and things like that. So we separate those two concerns because we know what we can do best, and we're going to specialize and make sure that we do the best job of that. We're going to let the rest of the community do their job that they are better at doing than we are.
Now, that was one of the things I didn't notice when I looked around the website. I didn't see a place where, as a member of the community who's done this and looked at a particular compliance issue or a particular market or a particular type of data, where I can take the base container, do the customization, bring in a bunch of rules, and then put that back to the community. Or even have a marketplace where, as a developer with a focus on this, I can build this stuff, offer it back, preferably with you looking through it and saying, okay, there's nothing in here that's squirrely. It adheres to all of our best practices. When does that start to appear?
Part of our vision is effectively to facilitate that type of community conversation. We already have, through GitHub and other mechanisms, abilities to collaborate with our community where they contribute, we contribute as well. We make sure that things are well done and all of that. We have inside of Sumo what we call a application library, which is typically at the beginning been built by Sumo people. We now allow for partners to help build applications and ship them through the Sumo quote-unquote marketplace. It's not called a marketplace yet, but it eventually will be. But getting to sort of opening this up to customers and third parties is where we're going. We want to make sure that we enable people right inside of our application to essentially build solutions, build best practices, bake them in, push them into the community, go through some process of validation by us to make sure that we're okay with what's getting shipped and delivered to our broader community, and at some point maybe even allowing third parties to monetize this content. But you've got your finger right on it. We are absolutely working on getting to that stage. We're just doing it as an evolution rather than a revolution.
So you've got a whole pile of customers here today wanting to hear what's happening with you. What are the top three things you're going to do for them this year?
This year, we're going to basically introduce two new powerful solutions. Solution for Kubernetes management, which is at this point the fastest single technology growing in our customer base. We've invested heavily into that, so we're launching that this conference, and we've got great feedback so far, so we look forward to that. Second is that we are this year, in the next couple of quarters, launching our next generation cloud SIEM solution for security analysts, which contributes to this continuous intelligence and DevSecOps world, because it's going to scale at the level of Sumo. It's going to deliver and break those barriers that currently exist in security solutions. And third is we're going to bend the cost curve of Moore's Law. We have been working very, very diligently over the last 2 to 3 years to change the economic model for machine data, because machine data is governed by Moore's Law. Moore's Law says machines are going to do twice as much every 18 to 24 months. They're also going to tell you what they're doing twice as much every 18 to 24 months. That's an exponential growth rate, but budgets don't grow exponentially, right? So we're spending a lot of time finding new ways of tiering data, filtering data, advanced algorithmic approaches to reducing cost by preserving performance and analytical capability, modifying our pricing models, making them much more adaptable to our customer business models. And essentially, we've been on this path to solving that problem, and that's a problem that's going to continue to exist, but we're chipping away at it and making sure that our customers get the best economics out of their machine data that they can.
Sounds like you've got a busy year coming up. Bruno, thank you for talking to us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.